You're listening to FBI 94.5 with me, Peter Hollow, and I've now got Michael T in the studio. Are you there?
I'm here.
You are.
Hello.
Excellent. I'm glad I identified your mic correctly. And we're going to talk a bit about the label that you ran for how long? About 5 years?
I think the glory years was that we had about 4 years from 1979 to 1983, I think, was right. When we sort of started to wind down. Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, so very much the post-punk kind of period, I suppose. I don't know if you really thought of it as that at the time, though.
Well, I think we actually, post-punk's a tag that's come afterwards, I guess. Mitch and I were talking about this recently. I reckon a co-founder, Mitch Jones, and myself started M Squared back in 1979. We just thought we were doing stuff. We didn't really think about what we were calling it. I guess we were experimental in the sense that we hadn't done it before.
Right.
So everything was an experiment.
Experimental.
And I guess that's the we were kind of inspired by punk. So you could say we came after punk.
Yes.
Because punk sort of enabled you to do anything. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, I think that's merely what critics like to call post-punk is, you know, and punk maybe opened up music making to a lot of people who might not have thought of themselves as really going there at all. So
exactly. We thought, well, if they can do it, we can do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first exercise we did, when Mitch and I first met, we were playing in a band called called Barons, and the Barons performances were basically in a garage in a place in Mona Vale. Just near Monavale Hospital, and we used to get up there and we would entertain ourselves by playing alongside King Crimson albums and Van de Graaff Generator, and then we'd put tapes of Kiss Alive as applause after a song, so it was like we were rock stars and in the privacy of our own garage.
Okay.
And I guess that sort of assembly stuff is kind of like the silliness of that. And we thought, well, this is lots of fun. And M Squared actually came out of that.
Okay, and of course M Squared was because you were both M's.
That's right.
Michael and Mitch.
What will we call this label? Oh, M Squared.
It was from the outset, it was a label, because I think, I don't know, for some reason, I think there was a studio involved in almost felt like a collective in terms that it was described to me. So
it kind of all happened by accident again. It comes from the Barons, and in December, Boxing Day 1979, we decided to, I'd been collecting recording equipment and Mitch had been collecting recording equipment. We put it together and suddenly we found ourselves in a terrace house in Surry Hills setting it up as a studio to record the Barons. And the rest of the Barons didn't turn up. So that became the birth of the band Scattered Order. And we thought, we were very inspired by people like Roger Grierson, who was running Doublethink Records at the time, and he was encouraging us. And we felt, well, he can do a record label, we can make music. So the label kind of came out of the genesis of recording the Barons and starting up Scattered Order.
Yep. Okay, and when you say recording equipment, you mean, tape recorders and things, I suppose.
That was a fantastic revolution at the time. I think before that, the late 70s, recording equipment was the domain of big mega national companies that had 24 tracks and stuff. But I think in the late 70s, that's when you had your first four-track, TAC four-track players became available. And everybody had Revox A77s, they were the very first recording equipments. And so we got cheap mixing desks, and there was some cheap-ish kind of effects. And we got nice speakers, and we had a recording studio.
Excellent.
And we used to use microphones from rock bands that Mitch was involved with. So he was doing the sound, and we'd borrow their mics at night time and use those to record with. Yeah.
And very much spirit of experimentation. I mean, there's drum machines and synths and things there. Were you completely self-taught? Did you sort of know how to play some instruments?
I learned how to play G and Ginny when I was a kid, and that sort of, I think, It was about, you know, I used to reckon we used to play guitar with our knuckles. That's the way I used to describe it. So we didn't really... I was always inspired by that thing John Lennon said, give me a tuba and I'll make a sound, a tune out of it. And I think that's the kind of ethic we had. Oh, we used to... Someone would leave behind a saxophone in the studio, so I think, oh, we can play sax now. Or someone would leave a xylophone or there'd be an organ or a keyboard. So I guess we just learned how to whap out a tune or whap out some noise and assemble it together. The reason we had drum machines was that... often there was no drummers around, we get those little things out of organs and turn those into things. And or sometimes I just get a cardboard box and an echo and whack the cardboard box and the echo then form the tempo, and we build drum tracks like that.
Excellent.
That sort of thing. We're really truly experimental, like sort of makeshift piecemeal improvising with what we got, what we had available.
And listening back to it these days, I mean, I find, I don't know whether it's just the time that I come from, which is a little bit after that, and but because this music was so experimental and maybe before its time or something, I think by the time I got to hear it, it sort of still sounded quite futuristic to me and not so dated. So it's to me, because of the way that music like this was made in that time period, it doesn't seem to have dated much to me. But I don't know how it feels to you as someone who was participating in that.
Well, that's lovely for you to sort of say it's futuristic. To me, it sounds like folk music. It sort of sounds like, in the essence, it was just people putting stuff together and just being really excited about what we were doing. We were having so much fun doing it, and then we were putting it out, and it was getting reviewed in the papers, and people were taking it seriously. And so by the time we put something out, we'd be thinking about what we're doing next, so we were that excited. Consequently, we didn't promote anything because we were always thinking about the next thing. But
So what was it like being an independent label at that time? There's a lot of talk now about how easy it is with the internet to sort of just self-release stuff, but it's not really the same as actually going to the trouble of either duplicating cassettes or actually pressing something on vinyl. And were you just distributing it yourselves, and how were you managing to get reviews and get it out there?
Well, we were all, I think Mitch and myself were kind of hustlers in our own way. So, and we had people like Roger Grissom and Double J, you know, John Blades and Peter Doyle, and Double J were really, really behind us and helping us out. Okay. So we had some advantages, I guess. And we're a bit weird, I suppose, to everybody else. So we kind of had that sort of novelty value. I used to hustle my way into reviewing records in Ram magazine, and that sort of gave me inroads and to get our stuff reviewed way as well.
Cool.
And literally, we were so independent that we had no distributors at all. We used to get Shane and I get, and Shane could drive, I couldn't drive. We'd get in his ute and travel around and say, do you want to have these records? Do you want to have these records? And we put them in shops, so we'd never ever go back and collect any money from them. So it was just getting them out was the... So we were really badly... compared to the way indie bands do business nowadays, they do business, we didn't do business. I was actually thinking the other day, I've been doing some uploading stuff with newer material we're doing. I think we're actually reaching a lot more people now, but still getting the same amount of money back, nothing.
Of course, exactly. although I had heard some of this stuff a while back, but part of my introduction to M Squared was hearing some of your colleagues, although I think not yourself, on a now defunct FBI radio show called the Sydney Retrospective, which was part of our Sydney Music Hour, the Bridge during the week, and Paul Goff, who's Pimon, and who was a big fan of what you were doing at that time, kind of told a story about how he came across your music in somebody's record store that had just sort of been placed on the counter, and it just looked really interesting to him, so he grabbed it all, which sounds it's very much a Paul Goff kind of story. But so it's kind of really interesting to hear it from someone who was doing that. You mentioned Shane, and I think we've talked about Shane Fay of
Dead Travel Fast
and
all the makers of Dead Travel Fast
and Megaphone Studios, and he's been a very kind of important person, I think, in Sydney's music scene for a long time. But that would have been a little later on, I guess, because all we've really heard is that the two of you started a record label together, the two M's. So, and now I have queued up something from the first album of
Scattered Order.
So how long did it take before it's Pratt Culture, is it, came out?
Pratt Culture came out 2 years after we first started. Mm-hmm. It's quite funny because we had the studio set up as M Squared, and immediately Roger Grierson from Doublethink introduced us to Patrick Gibson, and Patrick became the third person, and we also and Drew Johnson was also part of our, so we had the four of us became the M Squared thing,
right.
And so then we started recording Patrick's first systematics release, Rural. And that virtually happened, I think it was probably around January, February 1980. Mm. And then within that next couple of months, we then introduced to Shane and the makers of Dead Travel Fast. So we started working on the Vessels virtually. So we were doing all these other people's
projects. Yeah, okay.
At the time. And Scattered Order kind of put on the shelf a little bit. And Scattered Order then became the production team working on a whole lot of records.
Right.
So we were very excited then to, the first records we released were Rural by Systematics, a 12-inch EP, and a thing called Growing Pains, which did have one Scattered Order song on it, Mass Murder.
And that was a sort of, compilation or sampler or something. Okay, well, let's hear, which track is it that we're hearing here?
So this one of my favourites off the first Pratt Culture, off Pratt Culture is Swiss Like Knives and Forks. Yeah.
Great, okay. Yeah. And this is from about 1981 or
2? 1981, yeah.
81. Okay, great.
Swiss, like knives and forks.
that was Scattered Order, and a track from their first album called Swiss Like Knives and Forks. And I have got Michael T here, who is playing in that incarnation of Scattered Order. And we're talking, I guess, partly because Scattered Order, and indeed the first version, Scattered Order Mark One, are getting together to play some, I don't know, some shows, plural, I'm not sure again, but definitely playing this Sunday, in other words, a week from today, at the Cab Factory for very exciting M Squared reunion. And I guess that came about, is it true that that really came about because Vinyl On Demand in Germany wanted to put out sort of rarities?
We were approached by Frank from Vinyl On Demand about 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. He originally approached me, and I thought there'd be no chance whatsoever that we'd be able to sort of connect up with all the people again. Mm. And so I was a little bit slow in reacting to it. But then John Blades from 2MBS FM, he got in contact, and he managed to bring everybody together. Mm-hmm. And we all got together sometime in the middle of last year. Mm-hmm. And we thought, we all had lots of fun listening to things, and we thought, yeah, we've got a really good lot of material we could release. So the box set's actually really quite good because it's a whole lot of material that we haven't released.
Mm.
And we were quite surprised at how wonderful it sounded to us. So it was a fantastic experience, and we've put a lot of work into putting the project together. It's five vinyl CDs plus five vinyl records. One live record of the Systematics.
Mm.
At the same time, the Systematics, I had a whole lot of interest from another label too, so that they've released what we did in the afternoon, a double album of all of their material as well. Mm. So we thought, well, we're all together. How about we get out and make some noises together again? That'd be fun, wouldn't it? And we started doing it really slowly and having, just testing the waters a bit.
So in the... most of this stuff came out up until the mid-80s latest.
Yeah.
Shane Fay of the makers of The Dead Travel Fast has certainly kept on being active one way or other.
Yeah.
And I guess Endgame Records is his thing now as well, isn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah.
Which I've been playing some of without being aware of that, so it was interesting to discover. How about the rest of you, including yourselves, what has been happening musically?
What's been happening musically? I stopped being in Scattered Order after that record was released, really. For me at the time, experimental meant a whole lot of things, again, about not doing things that I'd done before. So I started thinking, wouldn't it be fun to make twee pop songs and tinkly bonk things? So I started sort of getting much more involved in Coral at the time. That was the band that I was in, with Patrick and with Fiona. And that got boring after a while too, and then I morphed into a metal band. And I started, when we went and toured Europe and did all that sort of stuff, and then it was time to have children after that and be a dad. But Mitch continued to work with Drew and Shane was in the various versions of Scattered Order.
Right.
And they went on to do much better stuff without me being around. It was, they did some great, great records, and hope they all see the light again sometime. Yeah.
Mm. So how much of the original Scattered Order kind of continued through those various incarnations?
The core members, ostensibly Drew and Mitch,
mm-hmm.
and Craig Bottle too, was a fairly consistent person throughout all those lineups here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do have an M Squared release of Scattered Order from sort of just post your time, and maybe once we've finished chatting, I might play one of the tracks from this before.
Mm-hmm.
Heading on to other waters, it's really, really wonderful stuff, actually. How about we actually hear now something new from you guys, because you have been recording. This is basically what, rehearsal recordings that you've just been demoing or something.
I call them home cooked, but I like home cooked. It's just based the latest stuff is for Scattered Automark 1. This is the material we'll be playing next Sunday night.
Great. Yeah.
And this is the track we're about to play. It's a marvellous song which is started up by Mitch, I reckon. It's a top 40 hit.
I'm sure it is. And this
sure is funky.
It. And it's called Art Delay.
Yeah.
And, great.
It's recorded like basically we're just doing the laptop things together and samples and loops, no drummers, just the two of us.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering.
Nice and folky.
Folky, yes. I was wondering what has happened now. I mean, you wouldn't even have a lot of that old equipment anymore, I suppose, from the times.
Actually, I still got some of the old synths. I got like the old Korg MS-20 and things like that. And
are you using them for
not this
stuff?
Time. They're a bit too hard to control at this point. We wanted to do so this time. I'm doing all my stuff from my Mac laptop at the moment. And I was originally going to bring Marshall amps and stuff like that and make a lot of noise, but I thought, I don't feel like carrying them.
so why? Yeah,
I'm getting a bit too old for that sort of stuff. Yeah,
and Mitch is also basically
he's using laptop, he's got a he's got a couple of samplers that he uses, and he does all the voice bits. He's got a much better singing voice than me.
Cool. So let's hear what Scattered Order are doing. Well, Scattered Order Mark One. I like this idea that you know, you're going back to the basics, the original.
There could be a couple of other marks that appeared this year too, but this is Mark One that's playing this time. Yeah.
Okay, great. And completely unreleased, which is how we like it here. Mm. So.
Accidents, suicides, murders, guns. Thank you. accidents, suicides, murders, guns.
Just shoot one bullet and kill somebody.
That is a bit of a home recording from the reconvened Mark One of Scattered Order. And it kind of represents some of what they're going to be playing next Sunday evening at the wonderful CAD Factory, which is one of many sort of warehousey venues that have sprung up around Marrickville. Was it a natural choice of a place to play at, or who put this together? Was it Shane?
Shane put it together. Yeah. I mean, Mitch and I were kind of like, we're not in the circuit as such, and not in this. Yeah, so we weren't really in tune with where we would play. Yeah. We just said that we wanted to play somewhere if we were happy to play with anybody, like we used to in the old days.
So this track was really a Mitch track, you're saying? But
yeah, there's a couple of songs like that I start up things to. Basically put together a whole lot and shared some things where we thought, hey, you might be interested in this, and and then I go, yeah, that sounds fantastic, and then we got together up in the mountains, and I brought along an array of equipment, and Mitch had an array of equipment, and we started to sort of work out which ones would work for us. And I mean, I'd also been practicing at home on my laptop, sort of just things that might fit with his ideas and vice versa. So it's actually funny. You can do composition from a distance nowadays. It's actually
What's it been like? Kind of, had you been in touch much until whatever it was, last 9 months or something?
No, we hadn't. We had very, very separate lives. You know, it's just very interesting how that's happened. You know, I mean, when you're doing this sort of stuff like what we've done in the past, is you have a circle of friends that you hang out with, and then you're doing something different and you hang out with a different circle of friends, and that takes you in. And obviously we all had life experiences too that we went through.
So when you withdrew, I suppose, from Scattered Order, was it just a choice that you made? It wasn't kind of, you know, acrimonious arguments that...
It's very hard to remember exactly what happened, and so which makes me think there was no traumatic sort of occasion where anything happened. I guess it's just like it's like your gaze started looking elsewhere, and that's where you kind of went boldly, sort of experimenting and doing stuff, and you think, hang on, I'm not doing Scandal anymore. And you're literally going, hang on, Michael's not doing anything at the moment, maybe he's not interested anymore.
Okay. But there was,
What was really fantastic about those days too is that the stuff we released really was the tip of the iceberg of the things. What would happen is bands would come and record at the M Squared studio, and after they left, they'd leave their equipment there, and then Patrick and I or whoever would scurry down, and we'd form interesting hybrids of each other's stuff, and I'd be playing drums and someone would be doing something else, and we're like sneaking in there at night time and doing things in the studio until dawn, then we go to sleep. So there's a whole lot of stuff back,
and those bands would come back in and record their whatever proper stuff.
That's right.
In the meantime,
a lot of that one was really great. My favourite stuff in the M Squared days is stuff by Drew called Height Dismay. That was the name she worked under. We didn't get a chance to release a lot of that stuff, but that was exactly composed like that. Someone leave the drum kit behind and we'd go and do a great pop song or something like that, but it wouldn't. What was really good is that, like, we used to go to try and do things, and we'd say, okay, I'm going to do something like Pink Floyd's Obscured by Clouds, and we go try and do it, but we couldn't play it. So we come up with something completely different. That's how we experimented.
That's great, because I mean, there's always the temptation to say, you know, what were your influences, and I'm sure there always were, but with the sort of things you were doing, I suppose that regardless of the influences, what was coming out was what you were making.
Do you remember the cartoon version of there was Superman the comic, and there was the Bizarro world.
Yes, Bizarro world.
I think M Squared was kind of like the Bizarro world, where the music that we were trying to make didn't quite look like Lois and Clark Kent and Superman.
Yes.
And our influences, I mean, I had my, you know, honest, open my influences. I just, everything I've ever heard just goes in like a sponge and comes out bizarro, I guess.
That's awesome. So as you've mentioned, sort of M Squared quite quickly became a place to release other people's music as well. And one of those bands is playing next Sunday night, which is the makers of The Dead Travel Fast.
Mm-hmm.
The story goes... Well, it's not the story goes, but the way they became that was that they made a track called The Dead Travel Fast.
On the Growing Pains EP, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then they became known as the makers of that track. And,
so how was The Growing Pains EP... Did you not kind of credit the artists because it was... Because of the interesting... kind of hybridization that was going on, or
I can't remember what we actually. I've got a complete physical, mental, sort of blank on what we actually did call them. I think they were just blank.
Yeah, right. And so they had to be called something. And
yeah,
it's a.
What happened again was kind of an accident. Someone said, "Hey, why don't you guys play live?" And we got a residency at a place called Brownies, the Paddington Green, and that became the place.
Paddington Green, right? Yeah,
that's where M Squared used to play every Tuesday night. And so therefore they had to be known as a band. We had to be playing
And so you guys and them, and they were kind of part of this residency?
The major live bands at the time we had were Scattered or a bit scared to play, so we were a bit shyer. The Systematics, Patrick got together with Michael Firewood and Fiona Graham, and they formed the Systematics. They were the big live band alongside the Dead Travel Fast. We had another hybrid band called Splendid Mess, which was, everybody would play in that, and we had no set worked out until we got up there. We sometimes just write cues on bits of paper and put them in a bin, and that was what we'd say, play a Sex Pistol song in country and western, and it'd come out bizarro, like something different completely.
Hence Splendid Mess.
But
some of it was, written songs that... Was that kind of how...
Yeah, well, the Systematics and Dead Troll and Makers of Dead Troll Fast Year had written material they rehearsed and worked on.
Mm-hmm.
And when Scattered Order Play, we rehearsed too a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
There was a few... They became like a magnet, a lot of other people involved with Severed Heads and Negative Reaction. And we sort of linked up then with Pell Mell and Wild West and all Phil Turnbull's bands that he was involved in. And
they would come and play at these nights as
well? Yeah. And then we started moving away from pubs sometimes, and we used to do these shows when Systematics broke down. We became Yara Coral. We started running these shows like that. We call them Tinkling Bonk Balls, where everyone would get up and play for half an hour.
Cool.
And we'd have like 9 bands playing, and you get 800 people turn up at a little hall on Devonshire Street. And it was a really great time. And I was talking about this with Mitch a couple of weeks ago about how it was the first time boys and girls were doing stuff, and that was really important. So it wasn't this big macho man thing. It's disappointing to look back upon that period, and there's a whole lot of guy bands that are known for that period of time. Yeah. But it's underneath that, there was guys and girls doing stuff too.
Great. Was this still 82 or 3 or something, or even earlier?
Yeah, around that time, yeah.
Yeah. Was this a very kind of inner city thing in Sydney?
Yeah.
Sort of Surrey Hills and
yeah, it was the major gigs we used to play was like the Paddington Green. We'd do their own shows. So we'd do the place called Governor's Pleasure down at the Rocks. And the biggest gig was the Trade Union Club. And that we used to quite frequently have...
Where was that?
That was on Favreau Street.
Yeah, right.
That was like the place where we would play and... pull 1,000 people and birthday party would play and vinyls would play some bizarre comp. I think they get Tuesday nights. We would get the Friday nights and Saturday nights. And
It must have been quite an amazing time in Sydney. Really, was Double J kind of a big part of that as
Big part of that. Yeah. It was actually wonderful. We used to be doing our stuff like at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So it was a really total 24/7 sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
You come and do a sound check and go back to M Squared, have a sleep, and go back and come and play the show,
Speaking as someone who was very little at that time, and so kind of by the time I was growing up in the getting out of school in the 90s, I think Sydney was quite different because Triple J was Triple J and National. Mm-hmm. and Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting speaking to you from a station that has really avowedly set itself up because of the gap that we felt was there after we sort of lost Double J as a Sydney station. It's just wonderful to sort of hear about the how much was going on and how many people would come to really quite experimental.
Yeah, we'd have really good nights like that. We'd also have really bad nights too. So sure. it wasn't like mega rich. It's funny, I was just talking to my son this afternoon. He's saying, "What sort of a station's?" And I said, "It kind of is like what Double J used to be like."
Yeah, we hope so.
And he said, "What's Double J, Dad?"
Yeah, exactly. I know. Well, I don't remember Double J. I knew that it existed. So sometime in the 90s or something, the makers of the Dead Trouble Fest got the Extreme label to...
I think it's early, I think Shane's much better. I can't really speak on his part, but from my feeling, my understanding is he wanted to keep the material out there and current. And when we are talking, Shane and Mitch and myself and Patrick, about how we might go back and bring the old stuff out and what sort of form, but there's a couple of possibilities, and I think we want to do it really good because we put a lot of work into the box set, and it's really paid off because we've remastered all the songs. And I used to dream back in those days, you know, we're talking about composition just before, and for us, assembling the songs was also not just about the music but the actual how it sounded.
And do you still have the the multi-tracks of all of this old stuff? If you want, like, you know, were they? Is it the original mixes that you're putting out of this stuff?
I'll tell you the story about that. It's actually quite interesting. The multi-tracks that we've got are all mouldy and crappy, and it's really surprising how good the cassette is.
Okay.
And we had metal
stereo cassettes,
and they've actually lasted 30 years. They've actually been. They're better quality than the four tracks and the eight tracks that we had back in those days.
Cool. So as long as you're satisfied with the stereo mixes that you ended up with. Okay. So is that what they were mastered to as such? In those times.
Oh, we know we mastered them to two track. A quarter inch tape usually. Even that's before we had digital.
Yeah, that's right.
And and I think we could possibly go in and bake them again, but I don't know the technical stuff about that. Shane's much more up on that.
Yeah, this kind of vinyl on demand compilation is not a re-release of M Squared stuff or a Greatest Hits or anything. It's
all new stuff that hasn't seen the light of day before, and. I think what we'll do, we're talking about like going back and releasing the old systematic stuff and the old scattered stuff, but we've got a version of that Pratt Culture we just played before.
Yes.
We've got an expanded version we're releasing in Germany in a month's time. We went back and remastered that.
On vinyl?
That's actually going out on CD.
On CD, great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that'll be available soon, but I think we'd want to do it with lots of information and lots of extra things, and try and capture all those funny little hybrid bands that we did as well.
I have a track that I'm going to play now of the makers of Dead Travel Fast. On this CD, it's just kind of track one. Do you remember when or how Tale of a Seahorse was originally released, and why have you selected this one for us to play?
Well, it's the first song on that CD that I had there, so it's made it very easy to cue.
Yes.
But I think Tale of the Seahorse was actually the demo of it, was when Shane and they all came around and we sort of listening to what they had. Tale of the Seahorse is one of the first things that we heard, along with another track called Dumb Way and a few other little things.
Yep.
And my personal reaction to it was that it reminded me. Things always remind me of stuff, and I really loved the music from the Penguin Cafe.
Yeah,
and it reminded me of that, and it seemed a bit classier than what we were doing. And I thought, this sounds really good. And consequently, Dumb Waiter was one they put more energy into. That was the B side. That was the it came out as a single first.
Cool.
But radio picked up. Double J picked up on Tale of a Seahorse, and it kind of almost became like a summer hit. You could just hear it everywhere where you're going on Double J, and it was like as a lovely breath of fresh air, I guess, and I like it.
Mm. Were people buying? This was a 12-inch with an A and a B side. Then was this it?
That was a 7-inch. Normal 7-inch sort of thing. Yeah, just two songs, and I think it was one of our big sellers. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, cool. This is the makers of the Dead Travel Fast. They are along with Michael's band, Scattered Order, are playing next Sunday night, on Sunday afternoon and night.
They don't sound anything at all like this.
Fair now. Enough. unfortunately, Shane couldn't come tonight, so we can't really talk as much about that. I would have loved to ask him kind of why they came to M Squared as kind of what seemed to them like the right place. But anyway, let's have a listen and see if we can gauge that for ourselves. The track is Tale of a Seahorse, although you wouldn't know it from the spelling of the title. There you go.
Yeah.
Wonderful. That is the makers of The Dead Travel Fast, and a song that was a big hit on Double J back in the early 1980s. Do you know when that was released?
That would be 1980, yeah. Christmas 1980. We did everything around Boxing Day and Christmas for some reason.
Okay. Christmas releases.
Or October was another peak one as well, and April, yeah.
Okay, on the M Squared label, a legendary label that we hopefully in the next sometime year or so going to be hearing lots more about as more of the older stuff gets re-released. But what's coming out now and kind of being launched, I guess, next Sunday, even if it's on a German label and people will have to seek it out. But it's a box set of unreleased material. In a minute, I'm going to play a track from a sampler. So this CD is coming out from or are you putting this
what
out?
We're doing is the box set's coming out on vinyl in Germany. It's actually out in the last week of April, and then once that edition sells out, we'll be looking to release that as a more accessible CD version, I guess, in Australia. We're looking for the right conditions for that to happen. Cool. As a prelude to that, we're going to be releasing a compilation of tracks that we've selected from that box set. So they're all remastered versions, and we're hopeful that will come out in November through Endgame.
Through Endgame, right. Yeah. That's Shane Fay's label putting out some lovely stuff at the moment that I've been playing. Now, this box set, is it LPs that comprise it?
Yeah, there's...
There's
five full LPs, and there's one of Dead Trouble Fast, and there's one of Scattered Order, and there's a full LP of Systematics or Patrick Gibson's version of stuff as well, and there's a full album of Cloakroom Assembly, which is the material I worked on. It was released... A lot of this material was released on our cassettes, so it has seen... Some of it has seen the light of the day, but we used to release vinyl things, but we also used to do limited edition cassette versions. We wanted to get out stuff real quick.
Yeah, right.
And then there's another bonus. There's an LP of all of the hybrid bands and things that appeared on our Christmas sampler that we released one time of all these, like Negative Reaction, East End Butchers, and sort of a compilation thing. It's called Insert Your Logo Here. And then there's a final bonus 10-inch album of the Systematics live at they supported The Cure at the Capitol Theatre. So we got this really pristine recording of them playing.
Now, the Systematics, did they actually exist before you put M Squared together? Is that right? Or
I think the Systematics existed between Patrick Gibson and Michael Fireworth before M Squared, And Fiona Graham and Michael Fireworth and Patrick Gibson were all school friends, so they used to write songs and do stuff together
a long time ago. Did Patrick then also play with you in Scattered Order?
So then Patrick then became Scattered Order. At one stage was Mark One was Mitch and myself, and then Patrick was involved. We used to have a couple of sort of stand-in drummers like Simon from The Numbers, and some people used to help out. And then when we were introduced to the prod people, Michael Prowse and Craig Bottle became involved, and that's the kind of version that you heard before at the Swiss Light Nights before.
We have a track from that live performance of Systematics called Vanessa Teratology.
No, Fat Cows.
Oh, no,
Fat
it's not. Sorry, I'm looking at that track name because I recognise it because I'm sure I've heard that track before. But we're actually going to hear Fat Cows Go Down an Eastern Beach, and you're going to tell me why it's called that.
So I'd forgotten about that, but Fiona reminded me the other day. But that was what her music teacher told her. It was anachronism to remember the, F, C, G, D, E, B, C,
yes.
So Fat Cows Go Down on Eastern Beach. And that's where the title comes from. So it's amusing.
There's a lot of funny little mnemonics or whatever for the cycle of fifths, but that's a nice one. Well, it's been really wonderful talking to you about this. People can catch a number of kind of contemporary acts, including Karashi from Sydney and I've forgotten who the duo is who are playing. Sorry,
Mark Brown and Khaled, and the Cult of the Hidden Nerve, and the makers of the Detroit Fast.
I have a couple of really nice tracks from the Cult of the Hidden Nerve, so if you stay tuned a little later on tonight, I'll play something from them. They're playing Last, whenever that may be, on Sunday. It starts at 5 p.m. And finishes, sounds like it'll be an event, really. Five bands, I guess, sort of one an hour or something like that. And both Scattered Order Mark I and the makers of the Dead Travel Fast, who we just heard there, although we are warned not to expect anything to sound like it used to, I suppose.
No.
But this is something else. This is the Systematics. And the track, as we heard, was Fat Cows Go Down an Eastern Beach, recorded live in, do you know?
That would be 1981, and it would have been supporting The Cure at Capitol Theatre.
Wow, and in 1981, that was early days.
Patrick did this really neat line that night. There was like, because the audience was a bit bemused to be confronted by an M-Squared band. And I remember this one particular moment when he said, I heard a pin drop. sort of captured the moment.
Right. But nevertheless, it's a great recording. So a nice little track now from the Systematics. Sydney music from years gone by.
Thank you. while our hostess has breakfast. The college means crossroads. The stockbroker knows finance.
Whoa. Sounds the like those things are at the wrong speed, doesn't it?
Nylons. The children. While a hostess has breakfast, the parlance reads crosswords. The stockbroker does finance. The wife wears nylons. The children are waiting for the cliffs to swallow the sea.